Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I discuss healthism and share a tumble that challenges those that judge health. And I share a press release from Monash University about new work on fat stigma from Dr. Samantha Thomas. I chat with Reagan Chastain from Dances with Fat, and I spotlight a blog by Diane Sylvan from Crazy Beautiful. Regular listeners of the show will know that I do not support the concept of healthism, which is the idea that people have a moral obligation to be healthy, or that people who are healthy are morally superior to people who are not. While I don't support the idea of healthism, I do appreciate those individuals who work to try to expand our definitions of what health means, or challenge the critical perceptions about health in our culture. To that end, there's something interesting that's been going around on Tumblr lately that I thought I would share. I'm not really sure who started it, but I know that quite a few people have contributed. And it basically goes like this. Unless you do the following all the time, please refrain from making my health your business. Stop every smoker you see and tell them how smoking is horrible. Tell people who drink alcohol how much it can damage their livers and bodies. Do not smoke or drink yourself and never have. Do not eat fast food. Eat no more than one serving size of something in one sitting. Never binge on any food, regardless of it being deemed healthy or unhealthy. Never drink soda, including diet. Don't do any drugs, including marijuana, and never have. Don't eat processed foods, including canned items. Eat the recommended daily intake of fruits, vegetables, and vitamins. Follow the food pyramid. Stop druggies and tell them how they are killing themselves. Cross the street after looking both ways. Wear a helmet when riding a bike. Wear a seatbelt while in a moving vehicle. Don't drink zero-calorie beverages that are loaded with chemicals. Don't tan and never have. And always cover your mouth when you sneeze. The purpose of this post and conversations that are similar to this post is the idea that health is a really broad concept encompassing a lot of different things. And very few people, if any people, can actually stand up self-righteously and claim that they are the perfect pinnacle of health. And it kind of plays into that whole people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones idea. The suggestions are simply that someone else's health is none of your business, just like your health is none of theirs. And as soon as we start judging people as good or bad, moral or immoral, healthy or unhealthy, based on their health activities and behaviors, it's a really slippery slope. One of the consequences of doing this, as we've discussed before, is fat stigma. Fat stigma, fat phobia, both of these things create anti-fat and fat-phobic cultures that both fat and non-fat people have to live in. There's a new press release out of Monash University from September 26, 2011, from the press release. Obesity stigma exists within many workplaces and cultural settings, often having a negative impact on individuals' health, social behaviors, and outcomes. A new study led by Monash University and published in the Social Science and Medicine Journal looks at how obese individuals respond to different types of obesity stigma encountered in their daily lives. Lead researcher, Dr. Samantha Thomas, said the perception of thinness as a health and social ideal is everywhere around us, putting pressure on the health and social well-being of obese adults. Not only are obese individuals depicted as lazy, gluttonous, unmotivated, and unhealthy, but scientific research constantly reinforces a link between obesity and a range of medical, economic, and social costs for members of the community, said Dr. Thomas. The physical visibility of the fat body also means that this negative public gaze is inescapable for those who are classified as obese. The study focused on three types of weight-based stigma, including direct, for example, being abused when using public transport, environment, for example, not being able to fit into seats on planes, and indirect, for example, people staring at the contents of their supermarket trolley. The participants responded by describing the different types of obesity stigma they faced, how they responded to this stigma, and the impact of stigma on their physical and mental health. The research found that participants described that more subtle forms of stigma had the most impact on their well-being. However, participants rarely challenged stigma and felt that they deserved the stigma they received. The study showed that obese adults also avoided situations where they perceived they would be stigmatized and constantly thought about how they could find a solution to their obesity. Importantly, this meant that many avoided participating in activities that would improve their physical and mental health. Obese adults face many different types of stigma, which impact in different ways on health and social opportunities. These stigmas can also lead to emotional distress, social isolation, and withdrawal from daily activities. While anti-stigma initiatives developed for other health conditions may be a useful guide on obesity, it is likely that initiatives in this setting will need to be more complex. This is in part because weight bias is everywhere and is inherent in the contemporary war on obesity, said Dr. Thomas. The study, How Do Obese Individuals Perceive and Respond to the Different Types of Obesity Stigma That They Encounter in Their Daily Lives, was published in the Social Science and Medicine Journal. Dr. Samantha Thomas and her team are doing really important research. One thing that makes their research unique from quite a lot of other types of research in this area is that they're actually engaging with fat people. They're talking to them about their lives, their experiences, and the way that they internalize and perceive the anti-fat messages that surround them in their community. If you want to check out the great work that they're doing, all you have to do is Google her. And I'm hoping to get Sam on the show soon. Joining me today is Reagan Chastain, a fat woman, three-time national champion dancer, and an expert on body image and health at every size. Reagan is also the author of one of my favorite blogs to read, Dances with Fat. Reagan, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Marilyn.
Thank you for having me.
And so I know that what we want to talk about today is the idea of body size as a medical diagnosis, which is a really cool topic, but I think a lot of the listeners might not actually know what that means.
Cool. So what I'm talking about is when we look at a body and say, okay, if a body is this big, then it is, that's a health problem and it has to be treated by making it smaller. And the best example I can think of, I went to a health fair with my friend Donna. And Donna is about 5 feet tall and about 100 pounds. She's a really small person. And she also is completely sedentary. She's a fan of saying that if we were meant to walk, God would not have invented cars. And she subsists mainly on fast food and processed food, right? She's just not living a healthy lifestyle. So she went in and they did all the tests and she had high blood pressure and her blood glucose put her in the diabetic range and high cholesterol, just every bad number.
Yeah.
And the doctor pointed to her body and said, "You poor thing. You're obviously doing everything you can for your health. Sometimes these things are just genetic. Let's get you on some medication and get this under control."
Nice.
Didn't ask her about her habits, nothing, right? She came out. I went in, and I happened to get the same doctor. And I walked in, and he looked at me and shook his head and said, "High blood pressure, high cholesterol, and type 2 diabetes." And he handed me a diet worksheet that was like a 1,200-calorie diet. He told me to walk 10 minutes a day. And so he said, "Lose 50 pounds, and then you can come back and be retested." And I was like, retested? Like, I didn't get tested in the first place. And he said, "Well, start doing healthy things and prove you love your body enough to do something for its health." And so I opened my mouth to say that I'm a competitive dancer and I work out 20 hours a week and eat healthy. And before I could say anything, he interrupted me and said, "You know what? You're right. You're obviously never going to do anything about this. Let's just put you on some medicine."
Great.
And so I insisted on being tested and my numbers came out perfect. And, I asked him what he thought and he said he doubted the results. And I was like, "Well, are you usually incompetent at taking blood pressure? Because that's sort of a basic skill." So anyway, the moral of the story is that when we say that we can look at a body size and tell how healthy that body is, it does a disservice to fat people who are told that healthy habits don't matter unless they make them thin. And it does a disservice to thin people who are told that healthy habits aren't important as long as their body is thin.
Right.
So I think that when we look at, from a public health perspective, we would be much better off looking at health, diagnosing health. I mean, he had all of the ability right there to look at my numbers and see my health, but he didn't bother because he thought he could tell by looking at my body. And that's dangerous to me.
And where do you think that comes from?
I think that it started out, we've sort of gotten more and more on the anti-fat bandwagon. I think a lot of it has to do with the diet industry. They make $58 billion a year, and they actually made a pretty big monetary jump when they moved from just saying that their product was for aesthetics to saying that their product was for health.
Sure.
You know, and then things happened, like people from Weight Watchers and diet drug companies got on a committee with the CDC and actually lowered what's considered a healthy BMI in the United States. So like 60% of the people who are overweight became overweight overnight.
Yeah, back in 1998, that was a good year.
Right. That's a nice deal if you can get it, right? So then you get to recommend your product to solve a problem you just created. Like, that's kind of interesting.
Sounds like a capitalistic dream.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of got a nice deal going. I can understand why, from a profit standpoint, it's really lucrative to sell thin. I'm just not sure from a public health standpoint it's how we want to go.
Where should we be focusing?
I think, to me, we have to realize first that health is multidimensional. So your health is made up of, it's not just your current behaviors. It's your past behaviors, your genetics, your environment, your stress, and your access. Like, do you have access to healthy foods? Do you have access to safe movement options that you enjoy, right? Maybe everybody can go jog, although some neighborhoods aren't even safe for that. But do you like to jog, or would you rather swim in a pool, you know?
Right.
And so I think that first, recognizing that health is not all about your current behavior and it's not entirely within our control. And then saying, look, if we want public health, what we should focus on is access to healthy options, right? So instead of pouring money into, you know, wars on obesity, why don't we pour money into making sure everybody has access to healthy food, getting rid of food deserts, making sure, you know, everybody has access to movement options that they enjoy. And then respecting people's opinions and decisions about how much they prioritize health in their lives. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the last thing that you just said about respecting people's decisions about how they choose to prioritize health is really important and something that often gets lost in the kinds of conversations that we have about health.
Yeah. It's really an interesting area to me because, like, let's just say that being fat is a risky lifestyle. I don't agree with that, but let's say that that's true. Well, we let people be professional bull riders, and we let people drink after work every day heavily, and we let people ride their motorcycles in the rain at 70 miles an hour. Like, we're sort of okay with people choosing risky lifestyles unless we think we can see it and judge it and then tell them they have to change. Running around after people who don't look both ways before they cross the street screaming, oh my God, look both ways, my tax dollars.
Right. And of course, do you think that kind of our, like, the disgust that we feel at seeing fat bodies plays into that as well?
Oh yeah. I mean, we've created for ourselves such a narrow, almost impossible Photoshop perfection standard of beauty. And so I think that it also creates, you know, so you've got classes of people, you've got what are called good fatties, who are fat people who are, you know, dieting and trying to fit into the cultural stereotype. And that gets them some sort of provisional acceptance from the stigmatizing group, right? They're willing to go with you if you say that you're trying
right.
to look how they want you to look. Then you've got bad fatties, and those are people like me who say, you know,
and like
I'm
me.
Okay with my weight. You know, yeah, it's that, you know, I personally choose healthy habits, but that's not, it's not your business whether I do or don't, right? But then we've also got people who are obsessed with not getting fat, right? It's such a horrible stigmatizing deal that we've created a whole class of people who are, like, desperate to not be fat, and I think that, you know, just creates stigma on stigma on stigma.
And, of course, all of that is contributing to the kind of environment that we all live in, both fat and non-fat.
Yeah, I mean, we live in an environment where people's bodies are political. And it's, you know, one of my favorite things on the blog is that I'm the boss of my underpants and you're the boss of your underpants. Right? So
I want a shirt that says that.
Sorry?
I want a shirt that says that. That's awesome.
I'm working on a shirt that says that.
Oh, really, thank God.
My graphic designer was like, we need to make a shirt like that. Yeah, it's like, you know, I get to choose if I drink to get drunk after work every night. I get to choose if I want to jump a motorcycle over 6 school buses. And I get to choose if I want to be sedentary and eat McDonald's every day. Like, I'm the boss of my underpants, and you're the boss of yours. So I don't get to tell you how to live your life or what choices you should make for your body. And I think in our society, we've got this idea right now that the cure for social stigma is weight loss. Right? Like,
right.
It's a rare thing that we tell a group who's being stigmatized, you know, well, stop making people want to stigmatize you so much. It's just not a normal reaction. But in society, we're saying, well, you know, we have this idea, and I don't think that the research bears out, that people can just move in and out of this stigmatized group whenever they feel like it, they can get thin, which, again, I don't think the research bears out. And so we say, well, since you can look the way we want you to, well, then you're obligated to, or you deserve to be stigmatized.
Right.
So I think that's a really deeply problematic argument. And I think part of that does go back to the sort of, well, somebody think of the children argument about, well, their body size tells us we're unhealthy, when in truth, we don't know if their body size tells us that they're a couple minutes away from a growth spurt. You know, if their body size tells us that's how they are genetically, or, like, what else is going on? I mean, we're taller than we ever were, too, but we're not freaking out about this epidemic.
Right.
Right, trying to figure out how to make people shorter, even though shorter people live longer, statistically.
And, of course, that, again, goes back to kind of where we started this conversation about body size as pathology, body size as a diagnosis.
Right. I can look at you and tell how healthy you are, and I can judge you and decide if you deserve to be shamed just based on my first glance. And that's really dangerous.
Right. Whether or not you get dignity and rights is based on what I perceive about simply by looking at the size of your body.
Right. And how I feel about it. You know, I mean, to me, the two things you can tell by looking at somebody are what size they are and what prejudices and preconceived notions you have about that size of body. But other than that, you can't really tell anything else from looking at somebody. And it's not like it's difficult for us to tell what kind of health people have. So I think, I mean, here in the States, I can go to a local drugstore and I can get a simple blood panel done for $5.
Well, I think that's actually a really good place to leave it. You know, I think that the ideas that you put forth about body size not being a proxy either for health or for anything else are really powerful. And I think that it helps contribute to the larger conversations that have been going on about obesity as a pathology and obesity as a diagnosis.
Very cool. Well, thank you again so much for having me, and thank you for the work that you're doing.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and I will look forward to your next piece on Dances with Fat.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Bye, Reagan.
Bye.
One of the things that I love about the Fatosphere is that members share with each other, and I am grateful to the person who turned me on to a new post from Diane Sylvan, the author of the Shadow World novels and the blog Crazy Beautiful. The blog piece that I chose to spotlight today is from September 9th, and it's called 10 Rules for Fat Girls. In this piece, Diane shares 10 rules, or if you want, you can consider them tips or tricks. You could also consider them your basic survival guide to living as a fat woman. She writes this piece as a fat woman who has written extensively in the past about issues of body image and fat acceptance and liberation. She proposes that these 10 rules are for women who are new to the idea of body image acceptance or are first starting to consider loving their bodies. But she also acknowledges that her herself often experiences her own ambivalence. These rules are so amazing that instead of reading pieces of them as quotes with my commentary in between, I'd actually just like to present an abridged version of the post itself. Quote, you see, I'm fat. 300 pounds of awesome from my double chin to my adorable toes. There's no concealing this fact. My fat is out there. It speaks. And it says, I am lovable and worthy just like I am, and fuck you if you disagree. I've spent a lot of time and effort removing myself from body disparagement zones and have gotten comfortable with the idea that people can look like anything and it's all good. But then I accidentally read the comments on someone's blog or I see some article that makes my blood boil. And I remember how many people out there live in a state of perpetual self-denial, self-denigration, and self-destruction just because of their fat. It is to those fat girls and to all of us who need a refresher course in body acceptance that I offer these 10 rules. Rule number one, you are not obligated to be thin, healthy, or pretty. It's bad enough that our culture assigns moral values to foods, Celery is good. Donuts are bad. Now, being healthy is itself considered a sign of your moral fortitude. Never mind the gap between the wealthy and the poor and how that affects access to unprocessed food and the time and resources to exercise. Never mind genetics or mental illness or stuff like, you know, character and behavior towards others. Thin people equal healthy people, and that means good people. So here's a thought I'm sure will shock people. You don't owe anyone good health. You have sovereignty over your body, and that means it's no one's responsibility but your own. Now, let's assume that being fat is morally reprehensible. Okay, fine. Let's assume it's the worst thing ever and that every time a fat girl eats cake, God kills a kitten. Whatever. How are shame and hatred going to fix that? How is discrimination and making people loathe themselves going to make them healthier? Obviously, this doesn't work, or the number of overweight people would be rapidly declining, wouldn't it, given how we're treated? Has hate ever made anyone a better person? Besides, how exactly does looking at someone tell you their state of health? There are millions of unhealthy thin people, but the automatic assumption is that they're healthier than I am just based on my size. Rule number two, don't talk shit about your body. Aside from the fact that it makes conversations awkward, would you let a friend or anyone verbally abuse you? Then why allow yourself to do it? It's hard to follow this rule given that body disparagement is not only the norm, it's expected. A group of women are supposed to talk about diets and shoes and how much they freaking love yogurt. I'd rather listen to my relatives talk about Obama than my coworkers talk about calorie counts. In such a situation, you can A, change the subject, B, try to change people's minds by making body positive statements, but only do this if you like to argue, or C, if you're totally stuck, just entertain yourself. Mentally replace words like car balls. It's way more fun to listen to people discuss good balls versus bad balls and whether or not they're getting enough balls. Before making a statement about your body, ask yourself if you'd say the exact same thing to the kindest, gentlest friend you have. If the answer is yes, I'd be surprised if you have any friends at all. You're certainly no friend to yourself. Rule number three, don't talk shit about other people's bodies. Rule number four, wear clothes that fit. Rule number five, demand better treatment from healthcare professionals. Your doctor is prey to the same forces of fat hatred that you are every single day. So it's likely that regardless of your state of health, at some point a doctor is going to recommend you lose weight. I've had some doctors who went about it in a far more acceptable ways than others. Really, it's more the attitude than anything else. Coming from a cardiologist, it's less ridiculous than, say, coming from an allergist. If your doctor is generally responsive to your needs and doesn't force the issue, it's not as big a problem as, say, one refusing to treat you for anything until you're thinner. And yes, this happens. If you don't believe me, you're probably not fat. The horror stories I've heard from fat people in the healthcare system are enough to make you sick. Here's a question to ask when your doctor tries to tell you your sore throat, aching back, or the axe sticking out of your skull are due to your weight. If I were a thin person, what treatment would you prescribe? Seriously, statistics show that weight loss fails over the long term 95% of the time. How many conditions can doctors get away with prescribing something with only a 5% success rate? Yet dieting is considered a panacea. You know what else has a 5% success rate in treating disease? Bleeding someone to let the evil humors out. You deserve respect and attention from your healthcare professionals regardless of your size. Don't accept abuse and condescension. And certainly don't pay for it. Rule number six, find a way to move. Now, like I've said, you're not obligated to be healthy, but you probably want to be. There's this weird thing we humans do where we don't want to die or feel like crap if we don't have to. While the evidence directly linking being fat with illness is sketchy at best, you'd be hard-pressed to find evidence that disagrees with the idea that regular movement is good for you. Our bodies weren't designed for our modern lifestyle, and it shows in how we feel. Exercise benefits body, mind, and emotions, and it can be fun if you find the right thing. Rule number seven, stand up for yourself. Fat people are expected to just take whatever abuse is heaped onto us because there's something wrong with us that everyone knows how to fix. It's assumed that we're stupid, as if our whole lives we've lived in a cave full of cake, and we've just been waiting for the random stranger to deliver the skinny gospel. Oh my God, Calories in and calories out? That's it? That's all there is to it? Oh, my sweet Jesus, I'm cured. Why hasn't anyone ever told me? You don't have to take it. You don't deserve it. You are a human being worthy of love and respect. And I'll keep saying that until you hear me. I've had more trouble with strangers than loved ones. But family and friends can be even harder to deal with because it's assumed they mean well and want the best for you. It's also assumed, as I've said, that everyone knows what's best for you, but you. Aunt Gertrude, I appreciate that you're concerned about my health, but I am healthy and I am happy with my appearance. Please respect that I don't want to discuss my size. Often strangers will try to pass off their cruelty as concerned. Don't be fooled. What they're saying isn't, I care about your health, total stranger, for I am a concerned citizen. It's, I find your body unacceptable and you should feel ashamed because I am insecure. Rule number 8, deal with your fat. Don't pretend to be skinny if you're not. Take up space. It's okay. We tend to gloss over an important aspect of fatness, fat hygiene. That stupid stereotype about fat people being smelly comes from a few people who don't pay attention to the needs of their body. Don't punish yourself for being fat by treating your body like garbage. Touch yourself. You're not gross. If you're doing yoga and your belly's in the way, take hold of it and shift it. I'm serious. Most people don't think about it, but it can really help. Touch your flesh. It's yours. You grew it. You own it. Don't be afraid of your body. Often because we are heirs to such body shame, we avoid getting to know our flesh. So when something does go wrong, we don't realize it until it's really serious. Rule number 9, there are worse things in the world than being fat. Hating yourself is pretty damn awful, too. Trust me, it's way worse than being fat. And rule number 10, don't expect to feel awesome about yourself every single day of forever. Given the world we live in, it's really quite a revolutionary act to love yourself at all, even for a single hour. With the constant bombardment of not good enough messages out there, it's bound to happen. So don't judge yourself for occasional negative body thoughts. Gently bring yourself out of it and remember, you are more than a number on a scale, more than a body at all. If you challenge your assumptions, day by day, you silence your inner critics. This takes time and constant effort, but the reward is a happier life and often a healthier one. Every journey has its pitfalls, though, and sometimes you fall flat on your face. Unquote. I love this piece, and I would encourage anyone interested to go out and read the piece in its entirety. Well, that's all of the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in, and make sure to tune in next week only on Access Manitou 999 AM. You can contact the show by emailing friendofmaryland@aol.com. Closing the show is Big Mama Thornton with Hound Dog. Yeah!